I'm Martin SFP Bryant, and you're listening to Geek Out Weekly. Every Friday, Matt Navarra and I get together on Twitter Spaces to discuss the week's social media news, based on what's in our weekly Geek Out social media newsletter, which also comes out every Friday. This week, we discussed the fleeting life of Twitter's fleets, Facebook's deflection over introspection, and loads more. Just to let you know that over on the Geek Out with Matt Navarra podcast feed, you'll soon be able to hear our interview with Will Cathcart, head of WhatsApp, in which we get his response to a blistering dress down from a UK spy boss over encryption and lots more. That'll be up on Monday, July 19th. And this coming Wednesday, July 21st, look out for our live interview with Shimona Mehta, head of EMEA for Shopify, where we'll dig into the social shopping revolution, a really big theme for this year. That's at 11:30 a.m. British Summer Time, 6:30 a.m. Eastern US Time, sorry, on Twitter Spaces. But back to right now. Let's go over to Matt to kick things off.
Let's jump into all the stuff that's in the newsletter, which is at the top of the space, because there's loads in it again. So the first thing I was in there, I spotted this morning. This is the tweet from Kayvon, isn't it, at Twitter, who's head of product there. He has put out a tweet about whether would people like to have the ability to edit tweets as part of the Twitter Blue subscription. Now, that's not something that would sell it. I don't know what it is. I'm personally very much anti-edit button anyway, so this is not a good news story for me. But interestingly, the poll also reflects that view that more people are saying they wouldn't want it part of the Twitter Blue.
I'm surprised by that.
But I tapped yes
on that poll because so many times when I've just tweeted something, I'm like, oh, that's a good tweet, and then I send it out, and then it gets 3 likes in like the first few seconds or whatever, and then I look and I'm like, oh no, there's a typo. Do I really want to lose those likes or that retweet or whatever that might have helped kick it off and give it a nice boost to get it going? And you either have to live with the typo and or risk losing the engagement. Yeah. So
do you think it's the people have said no, they don't want it, is because it's no, they don't want an edit button, or is it no, they don't have to pay for it? It's part of Twitter Blue.
Yeah. So, but I think for me, that's something that would actually get me to sign up for Twitter Blue if it was available in the UK.
Purely for the occasional typo, but I think I would have to be true to my values. I've said all along that I don't want an edit button, so there's no good me now subscribing to something that's going to be an edit button and using it in any way, otherwise all my values go out the window. The other thing that I noticed this week was someone sent me some footage or screen grab of Instagram feed. So when you scroll through the feed, on this beta version of it, I guess, it has shows you a video full screen as you're scrolling. So if you scroll through your feed, there's lovely photo, and then someone's got a video that's posted, it suddenly makes the screen automatically, without you doing anything, full screen, like a full video. And if you keep scrolling, it kind of shrinks back down again to a small. It's a bit weird, but it's also quite clever. I'm sure a lot of people will hate it, but who knows? They did talk about this. I think Adam Mosseri said in recent discussions about they were leaning into sort of full screen video stuff. So I think it's probably fair to say it's likely to be out for most of us at some point, or a variation of that. I don't know. Have you seen this, Martin?
It was interesting to see that Twitter seems to be testing a full width photos version of the feed as well. Jane Manchin Wong revealed this week through her digging around in the code. So full screen, kind of full width stuff seems to be the order of the day, the style of the moment.
Everyone wants these big, immersive, kind of in-your-face. They want everything at HD level, whatever. So, yeah, I think it's all following the same trend, isn't it? Let's have a look at some of the other bits and pieces as well, because there's a load of things in at the beginning. So, starting off with Facebook's $1 billion fund for creators. So, this is off the back of a lot of other companies, of similar companies, doing the same sort of thing with different creator funds in some guise or another, where you can do something for these platforms, probably provide the content isn't what they want, and you just sort of make them your main platform and you'll get a load of cash. And I think, you know, Snapchat has been the one that's been sticks to my mind as the kind of one of the biggest ones in terms of a million a day at one point, wasn't it? They gave away nearly $150 million, $200 million or something. But I think the number numbers. If there's a chart that's further down in this newsletter that was put out by the information, which shows all the different creator funds and who's paying how much and under what rules to get the money. And TikTok, unsurprisingly, is up there with a similar figure as Facebook. So they're trying to spend their way into the minds of creators, given the fact that they are late to the party for a lot of this stuff, because this isn't traditional territory for Facebook in terms of like all of these different monetization features, but also with the fact that it's still playing catch up with TikTok. So they're still, I think they could probably buy their way into creators' minds, wouldn't you said?
Certain creators, yeah. And let's face it, creator is a pretty broad term. And there are so many people out there who create things. I think when you hear creator, you tend to think kind of YouTuber, like big name YouTuber and stuff. But there are so many. I watched, an article this week from Insider, which said how much a Twitch streamer makes in a month. And I was expecting it to be like five figures or whatever. And it was like, 2.5K, like pretty, you know. All right, okay. Well, that's not great.
It is a matter of the lot at the moment. It's skewed to being either lots of people. The majority make very little in this world of creators, and then at the other end of the extreme, it's that kind of 1% that makes a lot. But this is now all about kind of bringing up the middle class of creators who kind of like are not in, you know, neither of those things. And so I think in general, this is a great time to be a creator. There's a lot of money up for grabs. So have a look at the details, because there's lots of bits in the New York Times' piece, and I'm sure everywhere else as well, about what you have to do to get some of this money. And if you want to rebrand yourself as a creator to make sure you're in with a chance of getting some. Twitter for professionals, this is not new news in the sense that there was bits about this earlier on in the year, but there's been some new screenshots of the Twitter for professionals mode and a creator mode, which is actually something we've already got on Instagram and on TikTok and other platforms, where you can have a professional profile or a creator profile, and ultimately it just reconfigures the features that are more visible and prominent to you and enables things that maybe you wouldn't have been able to do before because you need it as a creator or a professional or a business. So it looks like Twitter's gone or going down that same route, but it's still not active yet, is it? Maybe someone said they were testing it. I'm not sure, publicly testing it. I can't remember. Twitter for professionals sounds like it could be quite good. Basically all the power users, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Obviously, we've got business accounts starting to roll out already. So, give people a bit more of a chance to put their professional side forward or their creator side forward, show a bit more of their identity, get a bit more out of their profile. We're going to see other things, obviously the subscribe button for newsletters. They've talked about that. So there's lots coming.
Because they've also got the business
profile
ones.
Page is more useful.
Yeah, well, because that's right. Earlier on in the year, they talked about, and there was pictures out of the business profiles where it, rather than just having a simple pinned tweet, your profile can have interchangeable kind of bits that you can pin or be part of the profile, which give additional info to do with things like their, you know, background to who the person is. So this is all building towards creators being more part of the ecosystem of Twitter. And actually, you want to know more than a sort of short bio. You kind of want a tab that says about this account and a bit more detail about maybe previous stuff that they've done. So this is all building to that, I think, and I'm looking forward to having to play with it. Instagram has gone on with what it's been saying it was going to do, which is to kind of reduce the amount of activity where people are sharing feed posts into stories, because they say that they get a lot of feedback that people don't like the way it is at the moment. It's just too much reposting of the same stuff. It's not adding any value. And so they're putting a bit more friction in there, and a different way to do it by putting in a sticker for stories for you to add in a feed post. It's a bit more fiddly, but at the same time, it kind of hopefully forces people to think about what they're using reshare for. So I'm not sure if I've seen anyone who has it yet. Do you share a lot of feed posts? I don't think I do. I don't really do much of my stories.
I'm far more of a kind of native stories person. I barely ever share anything in my feed whatsoever. I like the stories mode of sharing on Instagram, to be honest. So that's just my preferred thing, unless I'm, you know, doing something where, you know, I really wanted to promote it or whatever. But I used to be a lot more of a kind of personal sharer of, oh, here's where I am and stuff. And I don't know. I don't have time for that stuff these days. So,
well, that's the main reason I don't do stories, because I am an ADHD Twitter kind of person. So stopping and creating something really beautiful or making it kind of fancy and engaging, which is what you should be doing if you're making a story some of the time at least. And mine's not the time for it, so I just don't do it. I'm a lurker. WhatsApp, a bit of WhatsApp stuff. So yeah, the multiple device feature that's been waiting to come on for a while. And we discussed this with the head of WhatsApp in our chat earlier yesterday. And it's quite a big technical change that's had to be kind of created to make this happen, to make it work within end-to-end encryption and being able to use your device. Use WhatsApp on multiple devices, but only one phone. But you could use it on your desktop version, the web version, on portal devices, etc., without a lot of the sort of fuss that you had to do before in terms of things. So that's a good thing. I don't think there's anything really more to say about that one. Snapchat, someone sent me a screenshot today of the fact that a change to the way that you view certain posts in some of the parts of Snapchat that are not scrollable feeds. There's a lot more. There's a feed that this guy has got there where it's actually just like TikTok, so a bit like the spotlight feed, which is a bit like that video vertical scrolling. Other areas of Snapchat's explore mode is going that way as well. So people copying what works, I guess. New emojis. Have you seen them, Martin? There's a bunch of them that may or may not make the cut for when it's decided later this year. I think the one, there was a peeking hands emoji that looked quite useful, I thought, and there was. What was the ones? There's a range of different ones in there, but that could be. I think there's about 50, 60, maybe even more than that. What did you make?
I love how people just keep coming up with new ideas for emojis. Like, will we ever have? Will we ever run out of emojis? There's a troll. I think that's a good one.
Very useful.
Yeah. So it's a picture of a kind of Shrek-like troll. So I think that one will get a lot of use. So that's probably my favourite. A glitter ball, an empty battery.
There's a saluting face, saluting face, and the other one is a hand in front of mouth. If to say like, oh, like can't talk about that. it looks. There's some good ones in there this time, so I'm hoping that they all make it because they're all good. What else is there? Yeah, Twitter will let you know if the reason why you're not worthy of a blue tick, and that softens the blow or infuriates you more. But there will be some added information. I'm guessing it'd be kind of pre-prepared sort of statements that they can whack in there for each of the areas that they could reject you for, or maybe not. But the numbers that they're getting requested, I'm sure, would mean it needs to be somewhat automated. So yeah, if you want to know why, if you apply next soon or apply from now on, I'm not sure exactly when it starts working, you'll get your reason from that.
It's probably a good idea for them because it probably stops people immediately reapplying, because if they go, oh, they're wrong, I should be verified, I'll just try again as soon as they can. Whereas if there's a reason, they might stop and think a bit more. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, and Instagram testing update to their desktop posting publishing, because recently they've enabled for some users, I'm guessing it's rolling out globally as we speak, the ability to do stuff on desktop for Instagram without any additional tools. And it now seems to be testing to an extension to that where you can trim videos. So it's just making it more available to creators to choose whichever way they want to access and publish and schedule, and they can do it in desktop. And Instagram.com is getting some extra features to allow for that. Have you got sound emojis yet on Messenger? I keep refreshing, closing, opening app. I haven't seen any. Have you?
Not yet, no. Are you going to start sending me lots of sound?
They reckon they're going to be really annoying. And if it's someone like me that already uses voice notes far too much and annoys everyone as it is, with my own voice, doing something where it kind of gives you an even more annoying voice with a little emoji is not going to make me smile. I think it's just going to be really irritating.
I think it'll be fun for maybe younger people. Maybe kids might enjoy it. Not really for me. I had the blog post announcement open was just reading it. I was like, what's that sound? All these sounds started coming out, and it was they had like a video of some of the sounds in the blog post announcement. I was like, whoa. Not for me, but maybe something for teenagers perhaps.
Well, Alex from Facebook is listening. Alex, I still can't use it. I can't get it to work. Tell me how to fix it. I've done everything I can. I'm on the beta, so I would have thought it ages ago, but it doesn't seem to be showing up. Anyway, well, when I get it, I'm going to blast a load of them out and see how annoying people find them. Another tiny one is Twitter. This does bother me because there's sometimes when I send DMs, which are the same message, but it's to a bunch of people, but I don't want it to be a group message chat thing. I want the same message to go to multiple people individually so I can respond to them individually. Well, they're testing that now. It seems like another one of those features that you think would be there or should be there because it's just a basic thing, but it isn't, but it's coming. So one of the tiny ones that I've wanted for a while.
My worry about that is it turns into spam.
Yeah, sure, well, that's
like
probably
me,
why.
You get added to those groups where spammers add you to a group of random verified accounts.
I bet you they'll give you a link or something. 10. I think they probably have like 8 accounts or something.
It's always fun to see who you've been added in with. But other than that, you're like, why have you sent me this? But if they can send it so it looks like they've just sent it to you rather than a group of people, it might be more effective. How they stop this being spammy, I don't know.
I don't know. In our newsletter this week, our newsletter is sponsored by Hootsuite, so I'd be very transparent that they are, but they've also put in a really good piece of content this week for those that want to know how to add a swipe up link to your story without needing 10,000 followers and not needing the new link sticker. There's a way to do that. It's been doing the rounds, I think, this week in a lot of places, but the link to that in the hidden gem in the newsletter. Other quick thing to plug is the Headland Consultancy in London. They got some amazing clients like TikTok, Pepsi, eBay, ASOS, KFC. They've got a really good social media digital expert role in London, which is London office based, part remote some of the time, but I think that's kind of like everyone at the moment. So if you have the need for a job and that sounds up your street, then have a look at it because it looks really good with Headland Consultancy. A few other bits and pieces, and then we'll get into the main kind of like talking point stories which have been in the news. There's a lot about the book that's come out this week, which I think we're going to come on to in a minute. And the story at the top of the In Case You Missed It links I've got in the newsletter, one of them is about information in the book around members of staff being fired effectively at Facebook for regularly checking into accounts of their partners or their exes whilst at work. And basically, like, if you're equivalent of working for a bank and are looking at the bank details of somebody that's, you know, family or friend them. So yeah, lots of shady stuff there, but the book's full of all of these stories. Verification, there's a story on CNET, I think, about the sort of inside the world of like verification scammers and how they operate, which for me was fascinating. I got like 5 messages last week or 6 messages from people saying, I've just seen your YouTube video of how to get verified. I'm just wanting to check that it's legit. And I'm like, I haven't put a video up. And this is the same video that's doing the rounds. It's some girl voice overlaid on top of a video which shows my account and then pretending to be me and it being their account that they're operating, which has got the blue tick, and then saying that this is how I got my blue tick. It's, yeah, another scam. Someone did a survey over the last few weeks of social media managers. I think it, from what I can remember, it's US-based, but it goes through based on number of years experience, job title, all sorts of other sort of filters and things you can do to figure out, you know, the typical pay rates for the roles in social media. Slightly, you know, not that it's not similar to the US and the UK in many ways because there's lots of different things in there, but it still gives you an interesting guideline to see if you're not being paid enough, basically, which I can spoil the fun. You're not getting as much money as you should.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Emojis, yeah, Adobe have put out their emoji trend report. That there's loads in there, so if you have a chance to Google that or find the link in the newsletter, there's tons of emoji facts and stats. So let's go into the first big news story, which is Twitter's fleets. It's dead. They killed it. Are you sad about this or not? Because
is anybody sad about it? Well, I'm happy. I mean, most people probably just shrug and go, well, I didn't really use it anyway. But I'm happy because people have talked quite a lot in the last year or so about how Twitter is really picking up the pace in terms of product development. But part of product development is killing the things that aren't working quickly, so you're not wasting resources on them, and you can focus on the good things and the things that are working. So I think it's good that they've given it, you know, just over a year, and it's not worked, and they've said, right, goodbye, it's gone. And more space there that they can use for other things, you know. You can imagine maybe something more to do with spaces or something up there.
I'd imagine it'd be spaces. And I was trying to think, you know, that when you go, I go into Instagram, I think I'm probably similar to a lot of people, and I know you've said you're the same, that I'll tap on the first story that's at the top, and then I'll spend ages scrolling. And if they don't run out, which they never do, which is the beauty for Facebook and Instagram of keeping you there, then I might look at some feed posts and stuff. The same behavior is just never sort of got going at all on Twitter. And there's lots of reasons why that is, partly because of the location of it amongst the app in terms of where they've placed fleets to be able to find them. Although they did improve it later on with the ability to tap the people's profile face and then you'll be able to go into them as well. But also it didn't have any creative tools really for a long time. It still hasn't got anything really beyond the basic sticker and some fonts, and you know, that's about it. And any one font, isn't it? It's not even fonts. And then also, so I just couldn't get into figuring out a way that would be really fun to use it for me personally. So I ended up doing what most of the people whose lit fleets I saw over the time it was there, which was putting a spotlight on another one of your tweets or maybe one other person's, because you want a bit more, a few more eyeballs on it. It's just kind of boosting and juicing existing posts of your own.
I'd have used it more if we weren't in a pandemic. I'd have probably used it more in the way I used to use pre-pandemic Instagram stories, which was, I'm at an interesting event, or I'm, you know, here's an interesting thing I've just seen, take a photo and share it, which I do on Instagram in normal times. So I probably have used fleets in that way as well, to reach a different audience with the same kind of thing that I wouldn't necessarily tweet, but, you know, it's interesting enough for a quick photo or something. So I wonder if part of it is that people haven't been using it because of the fact that, well, you're not going to share a photo of you sat at home doing not very much, or, you know, sat at your desk working at home again. So yeah, I do wonder if the pandemic is maybe one factor in why fleets didn't take off.
Yeah, I think there's lots of other things about it that kind of limited its potential. But one of the good things that have come out of it is that they're going to keep on some of the basic creation tools that were part of fleets will live on in terms of what you can do with other aspects of Twitter for when you're creating a post and adding any sort of media to it. So that's good, because for a long time I've kind of wondered why they haven't stuck at least a few more. Like the ability, like if you had an image and you want to be able to put a doodle to circle something on the image and put an arrow, you know, basic stuff, like annotation for Twitter and for news, you think that'd be extremely useful. And what it baffles me that hasn't been done. But anyway, Fleets is dead. I don't know if anyone here is listening used it a lot or liked it or loved it or whatever else. I'll be interested if anyone has a view on it, or just flash one of the emoji reactions in here to sort of tell me if you thought it was any good to you. But whilst we think about that, we'll also move on to the next story, which is about Euro 2020. And this has just been everywhere now for ages, and rightly so. This is a story about social media online racist abuse against England football players and also football players in general. I'm sure it's not just limited to players in England or for playing for England. And also the outcry from several ministers who previously weren't so bothered about it, and in fact actually were suggesting that, you know, people shouldn't be gesturing and being on the knee and the rest of it. So they got called out by some of the English players for that kind of behaviour. And then the fact, of course, the platforms, because, you know, this isn't a message that's new to Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or TikTok or any of them. And the same message seems to come out. It seems to be a cycle of the same sort of pattern. Something happens on social media that's, you know, they could have more of a role to play in and could do more to stop and prevent, that's not good, like what we're seeing here with the use of emojis to, you know, inflict racist abuse and stuff. And then loads of people that posts are not removed, or they say they don't, there's nothing wrong with them, because then you speak to Instagram and they say, oh yeah, it's, you know, we made a mistake, or we've changed the system now, it's fixed, there was a bug, it wasn't meant to work that way. And then an admission by Facebook or Instagram or anyone else that, oh, you know we need to do better and we will. And then it dies down and then it happens again, and that's what will keep on happening. But this one's prolonged a bit, you know, there's been a lot more attention on it, and so it's been a busy week for the comms people at various social platforms. What have you made of it all?
Well, I think part of it, and the reason it's happened, it seems to have become such a big thing in England, is obviously it's a bad thing, but it feels like it's been a way for people to focus their energy on something other than the loss. And so obviously, you know, the racist abuse is never acceptable, and like you say, it's usually flares up in terms of an outrage about it, and if it drops down again, it feels more prolonged this time because we got so close to winning and people are so emotional about that. How dare you do this to our lads and that kind of thing. So it feels like it's kind of people have putting their energy into it, the public are putting their energy into getting really passionate about it. And yeah, it's a good thing. It needs to happen. I do think that it's not entirely the platform's fault. I think that, yes, they need to do more. But as you were saying, you know, this comes right from the top. It needs to be, you know, you need to see people at the very top of society setting the right example. And we've seen far too much divisiveness and trying to engineer divisiveness in order to kind of win votes and keep people divided and keep control. That has really bad consequences. And one of those consequences is people who maybe hide their views when it's not socially acceptable, feeling it suddenly it's okay to let them loose.
There's loads of stuff that I want to talk about on this one, because it is a really important one. And I think so some of the stuff that I've been thinking about when this has been going on and what other people have been talking about, one of the main threads has been, well, you just need to get everyone to give ID. That's the solution. You get everyone to submit ID. You put real world consequences behind stuff that happens in an online world. People won't feel so emboldened and a bit able to do it because they're not anonymous. It would remove the anonymity behind it. And then that will eradicate most of it and problem solved. But that's not solving the what is the underlying problem, which actually is a societal, a cultural issue. This is a problem with people, humans, and there's a tool, a mechanism at the moment that's being exploited, and it's bringing it to the surface by the way those platforms work. And so my view on the whole ID thing is that, you know, there is obvious merit in that, because that logic does seem, you know, reasonable. But many experts and many people who have done a lot of research in this area have come out and said what a lot of people are thinking, which is actually there's a good reason why there's anonymity online. There's certain groups that need that to be able to kind of either protect themselves, whether it's whistleblowers, people who are victims of some other abuse and they don't want to be sort of talk about it publicly and knowing who they are, a whole raft of people in foreign countries that need that kind of protection of anonymity. And so you can't just rob those people of that anonymity to fix this problem. It's just moving one problem to the next. So then, well, okay, we don't have that. We don't have ID. We've still got the problem. And so then you're left in a situation where the platforms don't want to tackle and make some of the harder decisions about what stays up and what gets taken down, and the tech's not fully there to tackle the problem. But then government also are hesitant or taking their time in actually being the ones that set the rules, because they know that people also won't like it if a government's telling them that they can't post this or shouldn't post that. So we've said it millions of times, this is one of the worst areas of social media I can imagine you have to work in. And of course, let's not forget the moderation, the people who are doing this sort of human moderation and the horrendous stuff that they see and the effect it has on them. So, you know, what was your kind of, which side of the fence in terms of that debate around ID did you end up landing on with all this?
Well, the ID debate has kind of moved on a little bit. Some people quite a while ago were saying, oh, you can't have an anonymous account, so you can't have an account that's, you know, I'm Bob the Builder or whatever, with a picture of the character Bob the Builder. When you're not Bob the Builder, you're obviously a human being pretending to be someone else. But you can't do that because you need to show who you really are on social media. But the debate around that has kind of moved on to, well, you can have, you know, anonymous accounts, but you have to file some, you know, your driving license or passport or some kind of ID with the companies who run the platforms, so that if there is ever a problem where you've done something bad, you know, something illegal, then the police can very quickly go and say, who is this person? But that sounds horribly authoritarian. And there are lots of reasons why that would still have a chilling effect on freedom of speech. That would still have a problem where people were, well, I don't want to be, you know, I'm never going to do anything wrong, but I don't want to have that side of my personality tied to my real personality. You know, I can think of even just, you know, pretty innocent things. You know, people always think it sounds suspicious to be like that, but you know, there are many reasons, like you said, but even just people who have a job that is quite high profile, but they want to express their real opinions just to get them off their chest, and they can't do that to their own name because it'll cause all sorts of problems. And so having an alt is a great way of doing that. And Yeah, so I think the anonymous thing is a non-starter. I also think that the whole blaming the social platforms for all the problems, they're an easy whipping boy. They're an easy target. They're easy. Let's just blame them for everything, and then we don't have to worry about the fact that actually it's a much greater societal problem. In the UK, just remember that just a few weeks ago, we had a report into institutional racism that declared that the UK wasn't racist in any way, and or wasn't institutionally racist. And pretty much everyone immediately went, who wasn't involved in the report, immediately went, oh, that's ridiculous. So this stuff needs to start with an admission of a problem in society rather than a problem that is just the fault of tech companies.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's where I'm at with it, if I'm honest. I do think that there's this frustration and concern, the fact that the companies like Facebook and others put out these products. I keep saying Facebook. I said, sorry for Alex who's listening to this, thinking, why are you keep saying Facebook? say another company like Twitter, TikTok, others, is that, you know, they create products and tools that offer a lot of great services, free services, based on the trade-off with privacy and tracking and stuff that we know exists. And some of these are really, really great. But there's also bad outcomes from some of these, and some of them that we don't have, there's unintended consequences, and then suddenly it's out there in the open and it's causing some quite significant issues, and not just locally but around the world with the billions of users of these platforms. And it's a case of, well, we'll fix it later. We'll fix it once it's out there. Let's not worry about fixing it and making sure it works and testing it to a point we can see what the effect might be if everybody had it. Now, I'd imagine that a lot of that does go on. Of course it does. But it does seem sometimes that these things go out, these tools and features, and then the problems with them are something for it as an afterthought. And the analogy that keeps getting come back to is the one with a car. You wouldn't let a car on the road that you knew could potentially cause you harm and damage and all these sorts of things that could, be tested and made better and prevent these problems from happening. You'd expect that to be roadworthy and tick all the boxes before it's out there to be bought. But with social and tech and stuff, it is a completely different industry. Of course it is, but it does sometimes think, maybe they should have thought about some of this beforehand. But anyway, that's what my view on it. I think we should move on to other things. Time is half past and we've got quite a few other bits to discuss as well. So the book Ugly Truth, this is from the two writers from the New York Times, Shira Frenkel in Cecilia Kang's book. I haven't read it. I've read bits of it, from which have been in various different publications. There's lots of stories. This is kind of a chronology almost of the failings of Facebook as a company and the people that kind of created it and run the company. And what was the response? What was the outcomes from some of it? And stories from people who were in the company or close sources to people who could reveal stuff that maybe we didn't know before. I'm sure it's going to make for a great reading. And it's, one of, I saw a stat the other day about how many books there have been about Facebook in however many years. And as you'd imagine, quite a large number, but only a handful are worthy of reading. And from the reviews I've seen of this one, this is one that I would want to read. There's lots of bits to pick out of the book. Was there any bits for you that have already come out that were quite interesting? And what do you make of the book and the way it's been received?
Well, it's particularly well sourced, I think, this book. They've talked to lots and lots of former employees to get a good spread of opinions and stories and insights. So I think that's particularly interesting. So yeah, well worth reading. I've not read it yet, but it certainly sounds like something that's worth reading. In terms of things that have come out of it, I think, as we put in the newsletter, there seems to be a theme around Facebook perhaps not taking the right lessons from scandals and bad news about itself in the news, rather than saying, how can we learn from this? And maybe they've got a point. It's to shut it down and say, how can we stop this being an issue? How can we deflect from this? Deflect rather than introspect, as we put in the newsletter. And that seems to be a recurring problem for Facebook. Another New York Times journalist, Kevin Roos, this week had a really interesting article out about how his experiences with he does a Twitter account that uses CrowdTangle to look at the most shared posts on Facebook, and the reaction he got from Facebook executives to that, and kind of insights into how that was dealt with internally and how they tried to deflect it, and how now they seem to be actually dismantling the Krautungal team.
Well, I was reading this.
I kind of say, oh, doesn't sound like maybe we should just get rid of the product, or at least, you know, new to the product a bit rather than look at the problem.
I was reading this and I was thinking there'd be so many, whether it be social media managers or journalists and reporters that have been going, oh, no. And you can sort of feel the story building, like where they're getting to, like the Krautungal tool being pulled away and removed. I was thinking, don't do that. It's like one of the few tools that's actually any good for kind of digging into to Facebook. And then that's the way Facebook wanted it and wants it. But now it doesn't want any of it by the sounds of it, because it's actually showing itself up to be a bit more of maybe what people have suspected. I think we could probably, the people at Facebook and many others will have differing views as to what some of this data actually shows and the interpretation of it. You know, there's lots of ways to spin any bit of data. But the fact that, you know, if there's any credence to the stuff that's in this book about this particular bit, then I can't imagine what it'd be like to be is it Craig Silverman, I think that's his name, isn't it? Who does the stuff for Krautungal, business that he created and then sold to Facebook, continued working on and managing and developing his baby, and then suddenly this happens. You could say, well, Facebook has got form, so maybe you should not, you know, you should expect that they bought the company. But anyway, yeah, worth a read. Lots of stuff in there, and there's loads of links to different bits about what has been released in the book throughout my newsletter today. So have a little look. Let's have a quick jump around some of the kind of other stories that were kind of going on as well that were sort of smaller but noteworthy. So Facebook's making the Facebook Pay available as a payment option, a bit like Apple Pay on third-party sites. For me, that's just one of those things you kind of expect them to do.
Yeah.
I guess it also normalizes the use of Facebook as a member of the options you've got when you go to buy anything anywhere. It's Apple Pay, it's credit card, cash card, whatever, or Facebook Pay. But I do still think people see that word Facebook and then it just stills just slightly air towards the other ones, just because of so much how much they get talked about in terms of privacy and all the rest of it. But we will see. I won't talk too much about the spy stuff. There was a story that was to do with the head of MI5 talking about and calling out WhatsApp's boss around their plans for encryption. And we talked to Will at WhatsApp about it, and it's in the podcast. It's out on Monday to have a listen to see what their reaction to being picked on by the head of MI5. What other ones we got there? Let's have a little dance around a few of them. So Facebook, giving up, they say, on their brain interface tech plans, because they talked about on our podcast when Boz was there a few years ago about the plans for the ability to be able to kind of think things like opening an email, write an email, and the thought of it, your brain waves and electrical impulses on your body and things would tell the computer to kind of do what you wanted to do. So a new way of controlling AR and VR stuff, but now they're sort of backing away from that slightly, and they're moving towards more like devices, like wearables, like watch being the obvious one, which we've already heard them talk about. So the story headline of, you know, Facebook has brain implants might be a bit further away. They're slightly further removed from the chance of it being on the splash on the front pages of the New York Times for a little bit longer. What else have we got there? So yeah, Twitter's got in trouble for verifying several fake accounts. That obviously didn't go down well with the millions of people who are applying for verification. Mm-hmm. These bot accounts somehow didn't manage to do it. People are spending like hours drafting their forms, and then these people are just like, yeah, verify.
And also, if they verify those, then you can kind of understand why people are then like, well, I was meant to be verified, but their verification system is rubbish, so, you know,
maybe it didn't work.
It reduces trust in the whole verification system, so hopefully they've nailed down the bugs there and got rid of them, and that's not going to happen again.
TikTok stuff. TikTok has got like a pop-up shop in London. Is it Westfield? I never remember the name. It's Westfield,
yes.
Isn't it? And so there's a chance to go to a pop-up bricks and mortars, up what we used to call it, store, which is going to have TikTok creators and stars and experts for you to kind of see them talking about their career on TikTok, and for businesses to get some information from, and a bit more hands-on. So if you're in the UK and in London, want to go to a TikTok shop, there is one in London to go to. Let's go down. So YouTube's Shorts is now rolled out, the TikTok video equivalent on YouTube. It started rolling out to quite a number of the main countries around the world, the bigger countries around the world, but now everyone's got it. I still don't find myself searching out for shorts in the same way I look for TikToks, and less so for Reels. Well, it's even less for shorts, but it is early days. And it's just, I guess I just don't, I'm often in Instagram and I will use TikTok, but I don't find myself in the same way in the YouTube app scrolling through. So that's not a natural behavior to do, is it? So it'd be interesting how many people take up not only the creation of it from the money they're throwing at it, but also the consuming of the content. We will see. Discord's bought Centropy, which is a company that was splashing around to do with auto moderation and using AI to kind of help, I guess, you self-manage your account if you're being trolled a lot of the time, or you're a brand. It's now bought, that technology has been bought by Discord. So I guess they're going to integrate that into their platform, and their platform is just going, you know, growing hugely over the last few years. So that's going to be very useful, I'm sure. Clubhouse, have you used it yet? Backchannel is now there. So this is basically Twitter Spaces with DMs, which has been there since day one. Clubhouse has now got the thing it really needed, and as soon as possible, a messaging, private messaging feature. It's not fully functional in the way that I thought they might have implemented it, in that there would be a text chat room where you could chat to all or chat to individuals, and maybe that is coming. I haven't read the notes up on what their plans are for it. I wasn't part of that. But do you imagine yourself using it more because of that, or has it changed it for you?
To be honest, I had a quick look around Clubhouse, and some of the kind of regular users on there seem very excited about it, and we're keen to use it. So certainly one that the regular users are going to be happy about, but I don't think it's going to drag more people in. It's basically, you know, group chat or one-to-one chat. That's it. It's pretty basic, but something that helps add to the product and make it a bit more fully featured. The other thing that they did this week was they've announced that they've partnered with TED of the TED Talks to provide exclusive content for Clubhouse, which isn't surprising. None of the reports about this week pulled on the point that Clubhouse actually hired the person who used to book TED Talks a couple of months ago, and now they've partnered with TED, so it's completely unsurprising. But probably a good partnership for them, because they need high quality content to get away from all the scam rooms and silent networking rooms and all of that just put people off.
Yeah, is why I said it in last week's edition of this, and in the newsletter, that I've opened Clubhouse like a couple of times in the last month, barely, and even then it was just to see if there's a new feature, to see what it looked like. So if I'm a model of what most people are feeling like, and that's what I'm seeing talked about lots, is that they're just not using it as much. But it's hard to say, isn't it? It's all anecdotal for me anyway. There's Dua Lipa in the news because she's had photos that was taken by a paparazzi, by a photographer, and used, and then she's taken those pictures, as far as I can see, and used them herself on her own social channels, and now there's a claim for copyright infringement being put against her. And this isn't the first one that's been done with that kind of scenario, with celebrities taking images and then using them without the permission and paying the royalties for them for the paps. But there is that added sort of complexity, of course, that is that they often complain, celebrities, about, and rightly so. I don't think that's about wrong of them to complain about the intrusion by photographers and the pests that they are, and then they kind of take in the photos and using them for their own purposes and benefits. So it's a bit of a tricky one to think about how they're going to defend some of their things on this. But it also shows the copyright laws are still kind of a bit complicated, I guess is the way to say it. Let's have a look at some other stats. Oh, there's TikTok has now hit a milestone for being, is it the first non-Facebook app to hit 3 billion downloads globally? And I think that says a lot about kind of the rise of TikTok, but also about the monopoly potential or likelihood. Is it that's what they got? I'm trying to pick my words carefully, but I don't need to really. I don't work for them. People are suggesting, you know, it's taken this long and only this app who spent billions to try and get to it to be able to topple some of these apps. But I'd also say there's lots of companies out there in the world. There's always like super big companies that, you know, you'd like to be as good as and successful as. And the fact that this is one app that's, you know, challenging a big rival, I don't think that's too unsurprising. But it's just a matter of how much of that power is used for good and for evil. Let's have a look at the other bits. Anything else that's worth talking about? Let's jump down, actually, because I've noticed the time, and quickly finish off by looking at some of the stuff that's in the weekend reads, because there's a whole raft of smaller features. If you want to know all the ins and outs of tiny little changes that are quite interesting on all the platforms, then quick hits at the second half of the newsletter's got loads of them. But weekend reads, the main item, this one's from the New York Times, about Facebook wanting to court creators and the reason why that isn't going to be as straightforward as maybe it hopes or thinks it will be. I think that's, from anyone who works in social media, that makes sense to them. Do you agree that it's going to be pretty challenging for them, or do you think they can spend their way out of trouble?
Well, I think, as we were saying earlier, I think there are enough creators out there that that some of them will be attracted to it. It's partly, I think, for Facebook, courting creators, especially with the cash that they're trying to spend on them, is the way they're doing it, with incentives for reaching certain milestones and things. Does that feel like you're a bit of a kind of a performing seal, or, you know, like a hamster in a wheel? You've got to run around a certain number of times to get a nice little treat or whatever. I don't know, but there are enough people out there for them to at least have a good shot at maybe even defining new creators, maybe even finding new people who are doing things at the moment on Facebook, and actually find that they can monetize it in a way they didn't even realize they could.
I noticed that everyone who works in social, from a professional point of view, quick on Twitter, hot on Twitter to jump on the fact that remember, never forget, you must never forget Facebook's pivot to video and how they spent this money and told us to do it and we did it, and then they spent a load of money and it cost us loads and then they changed their mind. So yeah, you could easily spit that one back up again. It was a fair game, I think, from the people that spotted that. Other bits and pieces on there. What's the other one that was good for me that I thought was interesting? We can read. Well, there was the piece about how Twitter's most prolific citizen fact checkers. I think it was this NPR? No, Pointer. Because there's this birdwatch feature which is available in the US and it's being tested, and there's people doing it. They're not being, as far as I remember, they're not being paid, are they, to do it? And they're doing it for their own reasons, for different reasons. And in this article, it goes through the people are putting notes and messages on tweets for this birdwatch feature to assist Twitter and to assist other Twitter users. You know, this is a thing we see on many platforms. People are happy to be an admin or a moderator or something for things. I don't know if this is different or not. But Martin, what other weekend reads do you think they were worth pointing out for this week?
I'm always a fan of a contrarian take. So Wired's piece, "Is Social Media Making Us Better People?" I think is worth a look. "One painful interaction at a time, we're mastering the gateway virtue of the networked world, tact." So are we actually becoming better at communicating through social media? I think it's easy to say no, but read that for an alternative take.
Oh, absolutely. There was a story that I was hoping I was going to be able to put in the newsletter and hoping to be able to talk about today. I can't say which publisher, but a significant news publisher is doing a story about a certain social platform. Being so careful with my words here. And it's quite a detailed one, and it's not particularly a good story for them. And I contributed to the research that they were doing on it. And it was meant to go live yesterday, but I've been told now it's going to be midnight tonight for it to be a longer weekend read. So as soon as that's out, I will post it, because it would be interesting to hear what other people think about it. Other than that, I think the only thing that's worth saying is about next week's Geek Out podcast. We've got the Twitter Space, for the second episode with a second guest, who's the boss of Shopify in Europe. And they are going to come on and talk about all the things to do with social commerce, all the shopping features that we're seeing popping up, and what their role as Shopify amongst many other players plays in this space. So if you're interested in all that stuff.
Shopify really is the powerhouse behind the e-commerce explosion in many ways. And so the fact that they're helping some of the social platforms to enter the shopping world is really interesting. So we should learn a lot. So if you want to learn about one of the hottest trends of the year, do listen in.
Yeah, so it's a different time this week. It's coming up. It's Wednesday, 11:30 a.m. UK time. It will be for about 30, 45 minutes or so. And those that don't catch it, well, as I say, we will put that in the podcast feed the following week. those that missed last week, this week's one, which was with Will Cathcart, head of WhatsApp, it's on, will be out as a podcast on Monday everywhere. And I'll obviously share and tweet it, and you can hear what he had to say about some of the hot topics as well in social. I think that's it. I'm going to head off now and get myself a drink, get myself wound down for the weekend. I'm off down to the south coast to do paddle boarding in Sidmouth. Doesn't that sound like the most exciting thing in the world?
Paddleboarding. So verified, you're going to need to go down to Sidmouth Beach this weekend.
And, do you think that YouTube? No, I could go to Facebook and get some of that £1 billion as a creator and do a new series. It's paddleboarding in Sidmouth with Matt Navarra live on Facebook. It sounds like something that can make my millions. Anyway, yeah. That's what I'm doing. What are you doing?
I am doing not very much because I've got two poorly children who are getting better. So looking after them, basically, and hoping they're back at nursery on Monday.
Oh yeah, that kind of, you want to be a nice parent, but not, you just want to get back to school now. Fair enough. Right. Well, I'm going to go enjoy my weekend. Have a lovely weekend, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. We'll chat again next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian? Or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.